Hello and namaste. I'm Peter Furco, and this is Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. In today's episode, we're going to do something a little different up front. I call it Cappuccino Q&A. I have this level on Patreon, or I think I'm going to start calling it Patreon because it sounds like patron, where if you subscribe for the price of a cappuccino, your questions move to the top of my list and what I'm going to cover on the podcast, and I thought I'd start that today. So I had an interesting question from one of my cappuccino patrons about how the practices that we do correspond to this notion of tantra as being expansion and liberation. Because literally the word tantra comes from two words. The first half of tantra is related to this notion of expanding your experience of yourself. And then the second half, tra, which shows up in mantra and yantra, also, that word refers to the freedom that you feel. You're no longer stuck, bound, frustrated by that limited view that you used to have. So it's sort of the goal of doing a practice like this, that you get some sense of liberation, happiness, perspective, feeling more graceful in life. So in Tantra, we do that by this sense of expansion. And the question was, how does asana and other yoga practices bring us into that sense? So I'm going to talk about that a little bit right now. And then also later in this episode, I'm going to have a conversation with Sarah Platt Finger, who's married to Alan Finger and is also the co-founder of Ishta Yoga. And she has a real love of asana. And so we're going to talk about asana in general, as well as related to this question. But for now, the thing is, I've been talking about real yoga on the podcast, and real yoga is a yoga that is trying to bring a wholeness about, trying to help you find again the parts of yourself that you've been ignoring. Alan Finger likes to say we are fragmented in the way that we function in the world, and in a yoga practice, one that's real, one that's complete, the postures are a preliminary practice that helps you get to this expansion sense of yourself. So we do that at Ishta by doing asana with a lot of attention, paying attention not just to the shapes that we ultimately accomplish, like the way you might conquer a pose, but that you start to look at yourself as a spectrum of energy in which the physical expression is one end, and the energy of who you are is at the other end. And the more you start to see that, the more you have this expanded sense of yourself. The more you start to sense yourself as energy, the less the exterior is the whole world for you. The less you're concerned that, oh, my body is X. Right? Because you realize I'm more than just my body. So that's one of the primary ways that we move into that. And it's interesting, I was saying with Jenny Bloom last week that a lot of the podcasts had been about labor recently as we approached Labor Day. And as I was approaching this episode, I've been coming across some interesting stuff that's about this blend between the physical and the energetic, or what a lot of people would call the spiritual. For example, I picked up a book from one of my early teachers, Mark Whitwell, who said in his book Yoga of Heart that we have been in this situation in history where we're really trying to deny the lower three chakras, the earth, the water, the fire, which are considered sort of our survival energies. So as we deny those and try to only focus on transcendence, we are, and let me see if I can quote this exactly, Man cannot feel his own organic life and undervalues it with the notions of spiritual birth, rebirth, or an opening of the spiritual heart when the three lower chakras have been conquered. The idea of heaven is a gross disregard of the beauty of life on earth, unable to accept the reality of life, including the very real pain of birth and death. We develop consoling belief systems. With these, we try to avoid pains and therefore avoid life, and do not develop the due compassion for ourselves and others. So that's interesting. So here we're talking about denying the sort of physical aspect, which Tantra definitely does not do, and Mark is a Tantrika. And then I was listening on Krista Tippett's podcast on being, and she was interviewing Junot Diaz, and he was discussing where we are in the political and social world right now, and mentioned that having come from the Dominican Republic, a nation that has a rich history of Africans who were brought as slaves into the Dominican Republic, and they brought with them their culture of the pagan nature of things, what we often call pagan now, like an embodiment of spirits in animals and trees and plants and weather, etc. And then the Christian aspect that was present in the Dominican Republic from the Spanish influence. So that he was saying their culture is sort of one step ahead in terms of understanding how the spirit is embodied in our living. So I thought those were both really interesting things in terms of how are these physical practices that we do and see as yoga, if we're just kind of looking at a magazine or seeing it on TV or something like that, how does this get translated to this place of real yoga? And it does so by finding the spirit connection, finding that. And in Ishta, we try to avoid speaking from the religious perspective and try to go back to what is the essence of what we're talking about. So when you look right down at the essence of what is it that you're talking about, when you look at any kind of a religious or spiritual understanding of things, you're talking about shifts in the way that you feel and in the way that you're motivated and in the way that you make change in the world. And if you look that up in the dictionary, you're going to see the word energy. So we're talking about us as energy. So we're going to head over to Alan Finger, Sarah Finger's ashram pad in Williamsburg, and have a conversation. I had to take a train and two subways to get there, but you can just sit tight. I trust you're enjoying Peter's podcast. I fund this podcast using patreon.com. This is a unique artist funding source where you get to choose any amount you want to support the podcast. It lets me avoid running commercials for products, which I really would rather not do, and I hope you would agree. So check me out, patreon.com/peterspodcast. Sarah Platt Finger is the co-founder of Ishta Yoga and has been instrumental in developing Ishta's international teacher training programs. She teaches trainings, workshops, and retreats internationally with her husband, yoga master Alan Finger. Sarah, also a yogi raj or master, is a featured teacher on digital teaching platforms, as well as a key participant in several yoga organizations, such as Exhale to Inhale, which teaches yoga to survivors of domestic violence. Sarah is also a dear friend, and I'm looking forward to talking to her. Here's my interview. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Peter.
I'm so glad to be here with you.
I'm so happy to be doing this.
Yeah. I should say we're in the Finger Central here this morning with Alan doing Marma treatments and Thomas guarding the front door.
It's just one big happy family.
It's the ashram.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's okay because we have concentration.
We so do. We can Luckily, just stay focused. We're able to stay focused. It's all one big party, but.
Yeah. So we have been teaching side by side for more than a decade now.
That's crazy.
Long time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the podcast has this component of real yoga and actual happiness and deep living. And for the real yoga part, I think we've been focusing on how a lot of yoga is only asana. And so we've been talking a fair amount about meditation and some of the other practices and some of the maybe psychological components of things. But I thought it might be interesting to talk with you about the idea of real yoga as asana. In other words, what makes asana real yoga? So I've always felt like it's a passion of yours.
You know, totally
you've
is.
Self-described as someone who loves being upside down from the time you were a kid. So when you're looking at an asana practice, or when you're looking at someone else's asana practice, since you're a teacher as much as a practitioner anymore, like all of us, what do you see as asana that's real? That's real yoga.
Yeah, it's such a good question. And it definitely is something that I'm passionate about. I think because by nature, I'm a kinesthetic person. I did grow up doing gymnastics and dance. I did grow up sort of using my body as a way of, I think now in retrospection, a form of altering my consciousness. It was my gymnastics for me was my yoga as a child. And I feel, you know, because we are a tantric school and we are able to, the tantra really has, for me, integrated that all, you know, the power of the physical body and the sacredness of the body and how it is part of the subtle and causal body, these subtle densities of energy that make us up. It's just the physical body is a denser expression of it. And so how we hold our physical bodies, what we do with our body, how we express it, and also how what we can read from others is very indicative of what's going on behind that, you know.
And I should probably say from a tantric perspective, meaning to differentiate from some schools where there's this notion of most of the things of the world are problematic or potentially the thing you're trying to get away from and you're trying to get to some more transcendent place.
Right.
But in tantra, we don't look at anything as being inherently good or bad. It's just all part of what is.
Right.
And as you said so beautifully, the physical body is just the densest expression of our energy.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, our body is our power. And so we can use our body, you know, to kind of paraphrase that tantric quote, we use the earth to get up off the earth. You know, we use our bodies to move beyond the limitations of our body. But we need to be able to access it, and we need to be in a dialogue with it, and we need to be fully present with the sensations that come up in the physical body in order to move beyond them into the subtle realms of expansiveness and liberation.
Can you say more about that?
Yeah. Well, I think that I've kind of been working in my own practice and in my teaching with this concept of ourselves as dictators of our bodies, that we tend to set up this dictatorship, that we tell our body what it needs to do. And this can really come into the yoga practice. You can see it in certain schools. If we have this like no pain, no gain approach, there's definitely something to say for finding your edge, but it's not yoga if the breath isn't integrated, right? And if you're not staying present with the sensation. So to push beyond our boundaries and not have a dialogue with our body, you know, we need to be able to, because the body has so much wisdom from an anatomical, physiological perspective, but also from, you know, an energetic perspective as well. So when we can set up this relationship where we're listening to the feedback and we're receiving what the body is telling us, then we can, within that relationship, we can start to create, we can expand our consciousness. Our consciousness doesn't get expanded when we bypass, right? It's like we have to stay present with the...
I mean, you're giving such a lovely definition of yoga, right? Where yoga is the union of different aspects of what we are into a whole.
Right.
Right. So if you leave the body out, or you say, right, I'm just going to conquer the body, then you're not incorporating the physical as
exactly
part of the whole.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, what I love about Ishta is that we're really giving the power back to the practitioner to decide what what is the right decision for them to make in their bodies in that moment. And as teachers, you know, sometimes I think practitioners will be easy to give their power away to the teacher and think, oh, the teacher knows better than me, so I'll just push beyond my boundary.
Because the teacher's telling me to do that.
Exactly. And, you know, our school is so much more empowering. We're just, like, really seeing the wisdom of the practitioner and what they're able to decide and to take charge of in themselves.
Right, right. You raise this really interesting point, which is that there's a connecting that has to happen between the teacher and the student, but the student doesn't give up all his or her power around the practice, because the teacher can only to a certain degree understand or feel or know what's going on in that person's energy.
Right, exactly.
However, as a teacher, you get better and better at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And also there are certain things that a student isn't very good at knowing about herself, because you have blind spots in yourself.
Right, exactly.
And you have tendencies and habits, mm-hmm, and you tend to do those.
Mm-hmm.
And so when someone says, no, slow down, or that's too far, you're mm-hmm like, what are you talking about?
Right, yeah. Yeah, and that's what we need a teacher for, is for those blind spots, to
right
be able to see the parts of ourselves that we can't see,
right,
make conscious what's not conscious.
In terms of people trying to meet their edge,
mm-hmm,
I get a lot of questions, especially from either new students or students who have been... They were practicing, and then they stopped for a long time, and now they're back at practicing, so they have some preconception of what's possible to do in their body, even though
right
maybe their body's different now.
Right.
And they are always asking, am I ever going to improve? You know, am I ever going to get more
right
flexible, or stuff like that?
Yeah.
How do you answer that question?
It's such a good question, right? Because people do ask that, and like, yo, I really want to get to this, you know, posture. I really want to be able to master that. And I think, first of all, being sort of a little bit more of a goal-oriented person myself, I'm just going to, like, you know, flat out call a spade a spade. I am, you know, I do have aspirations, and I do have, like, that pitta drive in me. So I am familiar with that sort of mindset, and I'm also familiar with how that mindset can create limitations. And I, you know, if somebody approaches me about, first of all, I make clear that, this practice, nothing happens without practice, you know, that this daily attention, or as regular as you can be, to connect to your body, to your mind, to your sensations and consciousness, that is the practice. You know, the practice isn't ultimately about the poses that you're quote unquote mastering.
Right. In the way that in maybe a gymnastics practice, you would
yes
run through the same trick
right
multiple
and get
times
judged for it.
Right.
You know, there's
right
no score here.
Right.
There's no, yoga is an internal experience.
Right.
So we're using the poses to create an internal experience. So if somebody wanted to master handstand and the end result was to master handstand, well, what's the purpose of handstand? There are energetic responses to it. We are bringing, you know, that Shakti at the base back to the crown. We are altering our awareness. We're seeing things in a new perspective. And in that way, we can celebrate that posture as like this amazing transformation. And it can also, you know, psychologically or mentally help one to move beyond fears that might have been there before. So there's like this, a sense of, again, empowerment in some of these postures and right. feeling like I never, so that I like to celebrate for people, like I never thought that I would be able to do this and look at how capable I am.
Right.
You know, it's that again, like coming back to unbound potential, that you have right. the potential to do so much,
right.
but that our potentiality isn't determined by the poses, right?
Right?
That's something innately unlimited inside of ourselves.
Right. We're already that.
Yes.
The poses are just a potential expression even
yes.
of that.
Yeah.
In terms of how you move through it. In
yeah.
other words, if you're already unbound mm. and you tackle a posture you've never done before
mm-hmm.
and you find along the way, whoa, I have a restriction in this area that makes that pose hard to get to.
Right.
So then what you do with that is just like practice at living.
Yes.
I can get discouraged, or I can try, or
right.
I can modify, or
right.
I can take the component parts of it and
yeah.
work on them until I've got more strength or more range or more something, more coordination.
Yeah.
And then take it on. So you may never get to the original destination
yeah.
pose.
Yeah.
But you've gotten all this practice of living along the way.
Yeah, exactly. And that's also why I love the Kriyas. You know, I love to integrate them into my classes and into my practice, because it reminds us of that you can experience those in any pose, in any breath. So
yeah.
it doesn't really... And if you're not integrating the Kriyas, it's usually a good indication of, oh, like, I've lost the yoga of it,
right.
you know?
And the Kriyas are pointing one's attention at the energy of us to
mm.
first maybe visualize it and then
mm-hmm.
eventually get more sensitive at looking inside at what is at your essence. So
yeah.
when we do a Kriya practice, we're taking one of those energies and focusing on it, often
right.
with a mantra.
Right.
Do you have another way of describing that?
Yeah, no, that's a beautiful way of describing it. And I love how we all have really made this our own, you know, these tools and techniques that we teach at Ishta. You know, and yeah, I think it's the integration of visualization and sound mantra to bring our awareness back to the subtle line of our spine, which is called Brahmanadi. It's, you know, the line of our essence. And when we can connect and collect our awareness back to that point, it helps us to remember who we really are, you
yeah.
know, which is not the pose.
Yes.
You know, it's not
exactly.
the pose itself. So if you can connect to that,
yeah.
That's the yoga.
Yeah.
So the posture itself doesn't really matter, but at the same time you can, yeah, there is a certain response that gets called upon in the different postures.
Right. Well, you know, the Bhagavad Gita is such a manual for living.
Mm.
And it's framed in this, I'm on the battlefield and I don't want to go fight
mm.
these two families. But the instruction from Krishna is like eight different ways of saying, no, you got to go try to do that.
Mm,
you know, you
yeah.
got to go to the battle.
Yeah.
And you have to do it. And
yeah.
then
yeah.
the rest of the advice is, how do you do it without being attached to the result?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, when we tackle an asana practice, we're definitely on a battlefield.
Yeah.
You know?
You are. And the thing about it, about the asana, that I think is also so accessible for people is, it's like nobody's going to do it for you. Nobody's going to do Warrior Two for you. You are the only one who can get up and set your body in the position to do it. And then, so it's this experience of your own, which is, I think, from the Bhagavad Gita, of the self. Yoga is the experience of the self through the self to the self. And it's the same thing with the asana, right? That like you are doing it, you're having the experience of it, and you're using it ultimately to connect back to your true self.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To get that expansion
mm.
of who I am,
mm-hmm.
right? To incorporate the body as well
yes.
as the energy, as
right.
well as the transcendent quality. And have that sense of being whole.
Yeah, and because we know, like, if you feel some sort of limitation in your physical body, it's harder to feel the sense of expansiveness
right.
in our mind and our consciousness.
Right, and in keeping with this train of you may not get to the pose,
mm.
you also may always have some kind of limitation in your physical body. I mean,
yes.
I think everyone is aware of their
right.
limitations in
yeah.
their physical body. And part of the practice is to come to terms with that,
like, and
to
be okay,
with that, right?
Yeah.
To not be attached to, I'm going to change my limitation into a non-limitation.
Exactly.
Rather, yeah, you're changing your state of mind in regard to that, so that it's no longer this thing that's holding you down.
Right, exactly. Inhibiting you. Yeah. Right.
I hope you're enjoying this edition of Peter's podcast. We'll get back in a minute. I wanted to invite you to become a subscriber. By that, I mean sign up to download it regularly from wherever you get your podcasts, but also to support Peter's podcast on Patreon.com. Patreon is a great funding site that lets me make this podcast without the need for product advertisements, which I think is nicer for both of us. You can subscribe there for any amount you like. There's a link in the show notes at peterspodcast.simplecast.fm or go to patreon.com/peterspodcast. Here's the rest of my interview with Sarah Plattfinger. I guess one other thing I thought would be interesting to cover is that part of what happens in practice is that we change over time. Mm-hmm. And when we practice, we get better at accomplishing poses in terms of strength and range and coordination.
Mm.
But we also get older.
Mm.
We sometimes hurt ourselves, sometimes in yoga even, which is such a tragedy, when, yeah, especially if it's
a
teacher who's not really paying attention
right.
to what they're telling a student to do. That's always something we try to work very hard to prevent in our own trainings.
Yeah.
But people just naturally go through changes. What do you think should be a person's approach to that? I mean, I have like older students who seem like they're killing themselves on the mat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have older students who they only go to restorative now.
Right.
So,
yeah. Well, you know.
And I mean, I don't just mean old,
right.
like I'm old, but, you know, they're
aging or changing.
Like yoga originally, in the forms that Krishnamacharya was teaching, was like rolled out with teenagers demonstrating.
Yeah. Obviously, the practice will shift as we shift and as we grow. I mean, my practice has already changed a lot in, you know, 10 years, and what I'm willing to do or what I'm yearning to do has shifted. I've focused more from, I think I used to be a lot more on like kind of movement and flow, and I'm just feeling the power, the strength, and being able to hold and sustain a pose for an extended period of time. That to me is like mastery rather than like what's the range that you can do, but you know, what is the discernment I can have, the perseverance in a simple standing pose, like Tadasana,
right.
you know, and how Tadasana is the simplest mountain, we call it mountain pose. It's the just basically standing in alignment, in awareness. And that, I think, can be one of the most transformative experiences for people, to be able to stand with awareness and not check our phones or our social media or email and like fidget and change something, but just like really stand present in
right.
whatever it is that you're experiencing.
Right.
So, you know, I've had the great privilege of being able to teach Deepak Chopra, and he came to the practice, you know, and he's been practicing yoga for many years, but he's, you know, I don't know if he'd want me to share his age, but he's certainly, he's a senior at this point, and only on paper, not in his state of mind or energy. It has been really rewarding for me to see. I've given him a practice, and he does, you know, the poses is basically like catered to him and to his body and his constitution. And he does it every day now. He does that practice every day. And he has found this renewed sense of, I think, youth in it.
Right.
It's a very simple sequence, and it works on all different types of the body, and strengthening and stretching and balance and breath and the kriyas. And I think that, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but I think he would say that you're never too late to come to the practice and to find a practice or sequence that suits your body that's going to take you deeper into awareness, because that's really what it's about, right? It's about experiencing awareness. So if you're experiencing awareness in restorative and it's serving that purpose for you, then that's the yoga that suits you. And if you need a little bit more energetic or physical exertion and that's what's taking you to a state of awareness, then that's the right practice for you. But yeah, it's really about constantly finding that balance, right, where you're not snoozing at the wheel, right, or you're not...
Right, and you just said something really key, which is you gave this practice mm-hmm. based on many components of what you're seeing in terms of need and his constitution and things like that. And someone else who's maybe not taking advantage of having a teacher's eye is thinking, oh, restorative is for me, but maybe it's not.
Yeah.
Because constitution, which you just mentioned, and that word comes from Ayurveda, you know, we tend toward the things that will push us out of balance if left to our own devices. And so having that observant eye of the teacher can be really helpful so that you don't just do what, this is what feels right.
Right, what feels good. Because often what feels good isn't what's going to bring us into balance.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's why, again, like this, for me, what might feel good is to sort of continue, you know, moving and flowing, and that has a purpose for some things. But I know that for me, energetically, to find an ability to be static, because I move around so much in my life
and
in my day.
And it's totally natural given your constitution.
Exactly, yeah. So I need that for balance. And I think, yes, a teacher being able to witness the student, the practitioner, and see, you know what, this would be, I think this would serve you a lot to be able to awaken to your greatest potential or meet your edge.
Right. I don't know why it is, but I always seem in this podcast to end up doing advertisements for teaching.
And we do have a teacher training coming up at Ishta.
I just feel it's so important. I've gained so much from my teachers along the way.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, it is. We can't do it alone. You know,
like I mean, you can. And you know, I was talking to Jenny Bloom the other day about how so many people's relationship with teachers now is a virtual one. They're getting something offline, or they're seeing something on Instagram and following and then trying that stuff. And it's all well and good, but it's incomplete.
It's incomplete, yeah. And, you know, that came up in a recent interview I did on similar, it was for women, and we were talking again about, you know, a studio and a lineage and a practice and the relationship of the teacher, and that it is something that is required in this practice. It's like we wouldn't be able to... I mean, we can do it alone, but I don't know if we can come to the same... transformative space without a teacher.
I mean, all of the yoga literature says you need to learn this from a teacher. But, you know, I mean, I'm open.
Yeah. And, right.
But the thing is that where we started this about the body is an expression of energy, and we exist energetically on this range of things, the range of expressions, and the teacher is just another energy field relating to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when we don't have the oomph of that in our practice, it's much harder to make gains.
Yeah,
the teacher is. It's like you mentioned using the ground to get off the ground. The teacher is like helping to give you the boost, you know, when you step in two hands and get over the wall.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Sometimes you just need a little bit of leverage, you know.
And those extra eyes on you that can see you more clearly than your own feelings about yourself.
Yeah.
Because often those feelings are not, I'm not good enough.
Exactly.
And so you don't try where you need the... effort.
And, you know,
or you don't
teacher,
relax where you need the ease.
Exactly. Yeah. And a teacher's role is really, I think, to be that set of eyes, the witness, the seer, and to, you know, not jump down the well, but to throw a rope to you and to help you, you know. And that's what we do at Ishtas. We provide the tools, you know, we're providing tools to sort of help the person to either climb out of the well, so to speak, or to be able to see things with a renewed vision, a new perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it too.
Well, thank you so much for making
time, Peter,
for this conversation.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
We'll do it again.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, namaste.
Thanks so much. Namaste.
That's our episode for today. Hope you enjoyed it. There are show notes at peterspodcast.simplecast.fm. And if you like this podcast, please support it at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/peterspodcast. Thanks for listening.